This is The After Party, live with Kim McAllister. Pick a couch, grab a drink, and settle into the conversation.
Oh, I don't want to wreck the Hawaiian music there. So nice. First of all, I have to thank John Daly for putting that new intro together with that music. Huge thanks to him for helping as we make this transition at this point to a solo show. So thank you for being here on The After Party Live. I'm very grateful that you guys have come. The new program here is When the Mark Thompson Show Ends, This Show Begins. And I'm guessing that's going to be right about 10 after 1 every day. Maybe a little earlier, but right around in this whole zone. So I'll always check in with you guys in the chat usually and see if you're all here and you're all ready to start. So that'll help. It's a little weird when you're kind of, you know, basing everything off another show, but that's just the way it is. And that's the way we're going to go. Thank you to all of you who contributed yesterday. I really, really appreciate it. And your heartfelt comments and emails that I've received. Thank you so much. I will respond to everyone individually. So many good ideas about what to do with the show and whether to make changes and all of these things. So again, just really, really appreciate everyone and the help in that. Okay, now I've taken the loop off and we're ready to rock and roll. It is Travel Tuesday, and I'm kind of excited because I have another one of those best places to see if you're fill in the blank, a woman, single, looking for something special. But it's really just an excuse for us to take a little trip around the world together. So I'm really excited about that. So we'll do Travel Tuesday. But first, I wanted to go to our animal story. And this animal segment is sponsored by Karen Kay. A huge thank you to you for that really generous, over-the-top donation. I'm so, so thankful, Karen Kay, for your support of the show. So let's jump right into animals, because apparently there's something going on with these little guys. These are lorikeets, and something weird is happening to them as they're flying through the sky. Looks like they're fine one minute, the next minute, they're falling from the sky, just dropping. More than 200 fell from the sky over the last week. Scientists are thinking, we don't know what's going on. So they dropped from the sky above New South Wales in Australia. They were picked up and they were taken to wildlife care facilities. And it turns out they're suffering from a mysterious illness called lorikeet paralysis syndrome. The scientists don't know what causes this, but it causes the birds to become paralyzed and then fall from the sky because they've lost the ability to fly. The scientists have not been able to find a pathogen or environmental toxin responsible, this according to the University of Sydney, but it seems to affect birds only in the Australian summer months between October and June. The highest numbers in the months of December, January, and February usually. Now they're doing this in March. The birds are being nursed back to health, but that could be a long process. This whole parrot paralysis syndrome was first identified in 2010. It appears to only affect birds between the towns of Bundaberg in Queensland and Grafton in New South Wales, about 425 miles away. So it's something in that environment, maybe. The scientists say we've recognized this disease we call lorikeet paralysis syndrome from at least 2010, but it's likely that it was happening even before that. Right? There's even a tidbit of information, they say, that pathologists at the University of Queensland were seeing lorikeets that died with similar signs back in the 1980s. They haven't been able to pinpoint that yet. They say it's a neuromuscular system disease, possibly caused by something that interferes with the nerve connections with the voluntary skeletal muscles, causing lorikeets just to be paralyzed. Most of them recover, 60 to 95%, depending on how severe they have it, if they get the proper vet care and the proper rehab time. So they had to go around scooping up these 200 lorikeets that just fell right from the sky. I mean, sad but interesting at the same time, right? Here they are flying. One minute, boom, on the ground the next. How beautiful are those birds? Wow. Dolphins and manatees. What do they have in common? Well, it turns out I don't like to say this, but the dolphins are trying to kill the baby manatees, and the scientists, they don't know why this is happening. Their species are kind of cousins. This aggressive behavior has apparently been spotted at least 10 times over the course of 2 decades. The large majority of instances, though, over the last 8 years. This is according to research published in the journal PLOS ONE. It's a new study. The bottlenose dolphins seem to target manatee calves that have been orphaned, as well as those still with their mothers. The interactions left many of the manatees injured and covered in rake marks from the dolphin's teeth. In one case, one of the manatee babies didn't make it. So this is a brutal attack. Here's the manatees. Yeah. They don't know why this is happening, why the dolphins are attacking, but the attacks were recorded off the coast of Belize in South America between 1999 and 2020, most of them, though, between 2015 and 2020. 7 interactions were seen between dolphins and baby manatees, 4 the researchers found with bite marks, 1 that was interacting with dolphins and found with bite marks, and 2 were seen with a drone, a manatee mothers with their calves. In all other cases, manatees were orphaned and not found with mothers. So they say they can't say for sure how many were injured. They don't know. It's weird because bottlenose dolphins are really social animals. They live in these large pods, and they're considered to be one of the most intelligent species in the world. While the interactions did result with the baby manatees being injured, researchers say they weren't exactly sure that the dolphins meant to do that harm. In one case, some of the dolphins were seen swimming alongside a manatee calf, pushing it toward the surface, while others rammed it and launched it into the air. Maybe they were trying to care for the calf. Maybe they were thinking it was one of their own and trying to teach it how to jump. Maybe they were trying to protect it from something. So the researchers say dolphins play rough. They don't have hands, so clearly they socialize or mate or play, and they tend to bite each other while they do those things and hit each other with their tails. They may be treating manatees roughly, but not actually trying to hurt them. But bottlenose dolphins are also known to kill baby dolphins of their own species and probably others. So the drive to attack and kill young could help explain how they treat babies of other species as well. Interesting. Yeah, I know, not the happiest animal story, right? This one is for Wes because it's that time of year again. You got falling iguanas in Florida, Wes. Heads up, Buttercup. You never know. The freezing temperatures may bring another risk to Florida. We knew it happened last year, and now we're seeing it again. Iguanas falling from the sky. They have even little signs posted, falling iguanas in Southwest Florida, as the coldest air of the season moves in. They say they've got a pretty sizable iguana population from Sanibel to Cape Coral to Naples. And locally, the lows are dipping into the 40s, I guess, and maybe in some cases, some 30s at sunrise. So iguanas start to fall from the trees at 45 degrees and below. They just kind of like the parakeets falling from the sky. They just drop. 3 species of iguana found across Florida, all of which are invasive to this state. The green iguana, the Mexican spiny tail iguana, and the black spiny tail iguana. And they all arrived in Florida from Central America via the pet trade, right? So these aren't supposed to be there, but here they are. And in periods of intense cold, iguanas living in trees may fall to the ground, appearing as if they have simply died and dropped to earth. They're usually, though, just in this state of cold-driven torpor. And they will be okay. So don't think they're dead. They're not. They just need to be able to bask in warmth, and they can succumb apparently to cold, and that's what happens. So heads up if you are in Florida for the dropping iguanas. We don't want you to get hurt. We don't want them to drop on you, and we don't want you to freak out when it happens. Did you hear about this interesting thing? It's another Banksy surprise painting. It happened overnight. Here it is. Really cool looking. This is a Banksy, and it appeared overnight on early Monday morning in a neighborhood in London. And people woke up and thought, oh, is that a Banksy? Yeah, it sure looks like a Banksy. Everyone gathering, standing around, trying to check it out. Pretty interesting. And there it is. And so now people in this neighborhood in London are worried. Is it going to be a situation where their rents go up, their property values go up? Is that what happens when a Banksy is painted in your neighborhood? But they're really enjoying looking at it. I don't know if you can see down in the bottom there, there's a little figurine with a black bucket of paint. They had some experts come out to verify whether it's a Banksy or not, and it sure looks like one. So they think that that's exactly what it is. There wasn't any warning. It just appeared overnight. Can you imagine doing that cool art overnight? I mean, it took kind of an ugly side of a building and made it really cool looking. I'll say that. Is so much more beautiful than words scribbled. When you talk about graffiti, that's really art to me. The figure in the bottom is it's a black figure holding a black bucket with green paint, as if that was the figure painted the tree above. But it kind of, I know it's just paint, but it adds a little nature there. So what a surprise for that neighborhood. I don't know why you would want to do this. I really don't. But a bunch of Cal students decided we're going to set a record. We're going to do it. And here they are. They set this record by riding the BART train. They spent all day Saturday traveling to all 50 BART stations faster than anyone had before. They achieved the fastest time ever for what they call a speed run. But they also wanted to get the feat officially recognized by the Guinness Book of World Records, which they did. So the trip through the Bay Area around all the BART stations took 5 hours and 47 minutes. And that beat all the previous attempts. And they're pretty excited, saying, hey, we did it faster than we even planned. This is good. Nearly all of the students who took part in the speed run are part of UC Berkeley's Transportation Graduate Students Organizing Committee. So what a cool thing to say, hey, remember that time in college when we set the world record? They all love trains. They all have a passion for public transportation. And so one of them said, I'm going to apply. It costs you $5 to apply for a Guinness World Record. So he applied last fall. They approved the category this year. And then the group of students decided, okay, we're doing this on March 9th. And they documented it, and they did it. And even fellow passengers were like, hey, this is cool. People were taking selfies with them. They only missed one connection from Coliseum Station to the airport shuttle, despite making a run for it. Otherwise, though, everything went off really well. So technically, I guess this could be done faster. They have something to improve upon. I don't think I want to spend 5 hours and 47 minutes on a BART train. I mean, we've heard that they're not so clean, right? I don't know. This next one, I've had it for a while, holding on to it. I don't even know what to make of this. I don't know how this happens to someone. So you know those kind of electronic gates, security gates that come down, especially in San Francisco. You see people rolling down the gates at night type of thing. It looks to me like that's what this is. But this poor lady happens to be, she works for this business, and she happens to be standing in front of it, and she gets scooped up into it. I thought I had the clip of it. I might not. Nope. She gets scooped up into it. I have to share my screen with you guys. And her coat gets caught in the shutter, and then it raises her up, and she's dangling head first down on the ground. It's wild. I'm telling you, she's a grandma. She's left dangling 7 feet upside down in this, what they call her. They call her Super Ann because of her dangling situation. The whole thing was caught on CCTV. She's lifted 7 feet into the air outside of this convenience store in Ronda Sion Taf, which where is that? I think it's in England. Yeah. The story's out of Sky News. And she said, it's just lucky I've got a good sense of humor. The store even shared the clip on social media. It's been watched about 2 million times. So there's a chance you guys have already seen it. I don't know. But yeah, this poor woman, the owner had to rush outside and get her down, and she's okay. But I'm sure that was quite a surprise, and she'll have to be careful the next time she stands in front of the shutters, now that we know, right? Okay, let us move on to this story with neurological conditions being the leading cause of ill health. Yeah, globally, that's the leading cause of ill health globally. Neurological conditions affect 3.4 billion people, the number one cause of ill health and disability around the world, even more than cardiac diseases or cardiovascular diseases. Researchers say they've done this most comprehensive study to date. They analyzed data from a 2021 study, and it suggests overall disability, illness, and premature death from neurological conditions rose by 18% from 375 million years of healthy life lost in 1990 to 443 million years in 2021. It's kind of hard to grasp. This study was published in The Lancet by scientists at the University of Washington, Auckland University, and the World Health Organization's Brain Health Unit. They found the burden from 37 conditions is much greater than previously understood, affecting 43% of the population around the world. And here's what they're talking about: stroke, brain injury, migraines, Alzheimer's disease, other types of dementias, and nerve damage, right? Of the lifetimes lost, neurological and pediatric conditions were estimated to account for almost one-fifth of the total. They attribute the nervous system epidemic principally to the growth and aging of the global population and the increased exposure to environmental, metabolic, and lifestyle risk factors. So we're living in toxic soup. We're not taking care of ourselves. And even if we try to take care of ourselves, we're drinking water and eating food filled with microplastics. I mean, what do we think is going to happen, that we're not going to be affected by it at all? Apparently, the burden is not distributed evenly when you look at the geographics. Central and Western sub-Saharan Africa have the heaviest load. Asia Pacific and Australia, the lowest burden, but we're much better positioned to cope with it. The rate of disability in Asia Pacific, Australia, apparently come mostly from stroke, migraine, dementia, diabetic neuropathy, and autism disorders. In sub-Saharan Africa, afflictions were five times higher. Stroke, neonatal encephalopathy, dementia, and meningitis, the biggest contributors. The medical systems of high-income countries have 70 times as many neurospecialists per 100,000 people as developing countries. So if you have a better medical system, you know, you're better able to handle it. About 25% of countries have a budget specifically to treat neurological conditions, and about half have clinical guidelines for it as well. The study results prompting these researchers to call for neurological health to be made a global public health priority to mitigate the enormous growing impact, is what they are saying. I have not checked the chat yet, so I'm going back to see what you guys have to say. We're doomed. Doomed, I say. Yeah, sounds like it. No, she doesn't look old. That's the thing, right? It could be any number of neurological issues. So, yeah. Huge thank you to Wes for the $5 super sticker. Really, really nice of you. $5 from Luis, who sent me just the loveliest email. Thanks for keeping the party going and keeping it alive. Absolutely. The show must go on, my friend. Sandy, keep up the great work. Aw, Sandy, with the $5 super sticker. I really appreciate it. And Cindy with a $10 super sticker, loving the animal stories. Thank you, Cindy. I love you right back. I appreciate the support there. It really, really warms my heart and tells me that you guys want me to keep doing this and keep on going. So thank you very much. Wes, I hope you heard me tell you to watch out for the falling iguanas, because they're a problem there in Florida right now, I guess. So heads up, my friend, heads up. How about this one? There is an orchid that is pollinated by wasps. I mean, sorry, by moths, not wasps, moths. I'm calling it the orchid moth story. There's the orchid. That's pretty flower. There's the orchid with the moth pollinating it. Ooh, new word. Beautiful. This orchid is pollinated by moths. This story coming from Popular Science. The nectar spurs are 13 inches long and they stand out compared to the flower's dainty little petals. Apparently, it lets the moths be able to see them. These orchids can be found all over the planet. There are more than 25,000 species of orchids, more being discovered every single year. Madagascar is known for flowers with long floral tubes pollinated by these long-tongued hawk moths. The most famous orchid species on the island is called Darwin's orchid. And he had a theory, Darwin, that the flower was pollinated by a moth that was unknown at that time. Now, 41 years after his prediction, scientists officially describe the large hawk moth, proving Darwin was indeed correct. Yes. The newly discovered species, I'll try to say it, but the name means unpredicted. Solanangus impredicta is its name. Solanangus impredicta. It means unpredicted. And it's a nod to Charles Darwin's correct prediction that the specific moth is the orchid's primary pollinator. Again, the newly discovered orchid has a nectar spur 13 inches long, despite having petals that are less than 1 inch long. The tube-like projections from the plant's petals produce and retain nectar for pollinators like bees, butterflies, and yes, moths. It's the third longest spur that scientists have ever recorded. So, here come the moths to take care of business. Kind of interesting. The orchid belongs to a group called Darwin's Pollination Guild. And it's unfortunately threatened by mining activities and possibly poaching for the orchid trade. So they're trying to make an effort to conserve and protect these orchids. We'll see how this goes. But pretty interesting that he's proven right after all of this time. Here is another world record. This is a dosa. At first I thought, what's a dosa? Oh, that looks kind of weird. Apparently it's an type of Indian food. And this is an Indian food company celebrating its 100th anniversary. They're called MTR Foods. They got a group together of about 75 chefs. And they said, we're going to make the world's biggest dosa. And that they did. This thing measures more than 123 feet long. They did it at their factory in Bangalore. What is a dosa, you ask? Maybe you already know. I did not. It's kind of a crepe. It's a crepey, savory dish. It took the Guinness World Record for the longest dosa, which was 53 feet, 8.69 inches. That happened in another part of India in 2014, to this one, 123 feet long in the celebration of their 100th anniversary. So now they have the world's record title for the longest dosa. Okay, congratulations. I guess that's a good way to celebrate on your 100th anniversary, right? Why not? Vilma, thank you. I know you're a political junkie, but keep the party going. Thank you, Vilma. I really appreciate that. Nice. Maud for my wine fund. Thank you, Maud. I love a little red wine. You know me. I appreciate that. Thank you guys for the support. Really, really nice of you. Calvin's getting hungry just looking at the long dosa. I've never had a dosa, but now I kind of want one. Maybe a dosa, a little glass of red wine. I don't know. Could be good. Murphy, regarding the moth story, is that a nectar spur in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me? Yeah. Clark, hi, Clark Reed. Come back on the show. Turns out I need a partner, my friend. As long as it's not Mothra Mothra tied to pollinate Godzilla. Yeah, no, we don't want that. No, we don't. All right, let us move forward because something happened in Michigan. It's the lottery. A prediction. This is always weird. When someone predicts something and it happens, I always wonder, how did you get that right? Are you cheating? But no, this Michigan man correctly predicted a $500,000 lottery win. This man, who decided a new clerk at his local store was a lucky sign, correctly predicted he would win a $500,000 lottery prize, and that he did. The 59-year-old man from Chippewa County told Michigan lottery officials he stopped at the Detour Easy Mart on Ontario Street in Detour Village for his usual scratch-off tickets. He said, I buy tickets, instant tickets every day. Typically, I do it on my way to work. The gas station where I usually stop had a new person working, and I said, the new clerk is going to sell me a big winner today. And his prediction came true when he scratched off his $500,000 cash multiplier ticket and revealed the $500,000 top prize. He said, when I scratched off that ticket and I saw that $500,000 prize, I had to count the zeros multiple times to make sure I was reading it right. I was so happy, I almost cried, he said. I'm not going to cry. The winner said his prize money will go toward retirement, home repairs, and investing. And he says winning hasn't fully sunk in yet, but it's such a relief. He said it's going to allow me to take care of some things that have been on my list and to live more comfortably. So congratulations to him. They don't name him. I guess you don't have to be named in some states or if it's a smaller prize. Is that the power of positive thinking, you think? When you walk in and go, you look at the person, you go, this guy, he's the one that's going to sell me the winning ticket. And somehow you manifest that that's actually going to happen. I don't know. Stranger things, right? Maybe it's the power of positivity. I love an old mystery. And that is what we have at this house. That's kind of a blurry picture, but this couple bought this 100-year-old house and they're doing some renovations. And look what they found when they started renovating the fireplace. They found mysterious letters from the 1930s. These letters, of course, stash of letters, date back nearly 100 years. Laura and Jason Lamont B. Parker said they've been renovating this house in Widnes, Cheshire, since purchasing it in March of 2023, and they were surprised to find some old mail when they tore out the living room fireplace. There were all these letters behind the fireplace, and the woman said, I just said, look at all these. I don't know if they were trying to be burned when they fell down the back of it or what. The letters were well preserved. They date from 1934, 1935, 1936, and 1937, and they were all addressed to someone named Miss Rhoda Taylor. They contacted the owner of the house or the previous owners of the house, but those people didn't have any information about someone with that name either. They say they're hoping to return the letters to a relative if they can find more information about Miss Taylor's identity. Interestingly, I don't know. I mean, do you read the letters? Because I think I would. Or is it someone else's private mail and you just kind of, you see who it's addressed to and try to return them? I think I'm reading the letters. Yeah, from the 1930s. I wish the story told me what the letters say. I want more information. Come on now, give me the scoop. But no. Mm-mm. All right. It is time for Travel Tuesday. Woohoo! We're still doing it. Travel Tuesday indeed. And I have some great pictures involved with Travel Tuesday. I'm so excited to show them to you. But first, it's Travel Tuesday. Welcome to it and thanks for being here. Okay, let's first start with the best street. We reported on this last year when the best street in the world was named. So it's only apropos that in 2024, we show you the best street as well. And the best street in the world in 2024, named by Time Out, is this street. This is High Street in Melbourne, Australia. It is being praised for its buzzy vibe, its community spirit, and all the cool things that make people want to spend time there. It is located in the coastal Australian city of Melbourne. It crisscrosses the suburbs there. And they say it's got a unique something for everyone type of local business scene going on. From Casa Nata, which sells delicious Portuguese custard tarts, to 1800 Lasagna, which was a restaurant that started during the pandemic and now is this pasta spot that has outdoor seating and it's really fun. They've got bar hopping on High Street. They've got intimate, exclusive rooftop bars, dance spots, all kinds of things. So this is the best street in the world of 2024. Other runners-up include Hollywood Road in Hong Kong at number 2. Number 3, East 11th Street in Austin, Texas. They say they pack a lot into a quarter mile on there, including a vintage bookstore and wine bar. So if you're in San Antonio, or you're rather in Austin, check that out. Sorry, I had Tony in San Antonio on the brain. So here's the top 10 coolest streets, all right? High Street in Melbourne, Hollywood Road in Hong Kong, East 11th in Austin, Texas, Guatemala Street in Buenos Aires, Commercial Drive in Vancouver, Jalan Pedaling in Kuala Lumpur, Rua da Boa Vista in Lisbon, Portugal, Arnaldo Quintela in Rio de Janeiro, Chazawa Dori in Tokyo, and Consell Descent in Barcelona, just in case you are wondering. There are some places in the world that will pay you to live there. Yeah. So if you're thinking, listen, I'm running out of money, I need to do something different, maybe I'll go somewhere where they're going to pay me to move there. Well, I have some cities for you. Now, I don't think it's enough. These cities are going to pay you up to $15,000. That's not enough long term to really sustain it. But I will say, hey, you know what? If in some cases, there it is, the cost of living is less, maybe it would work out. I don't know. But these cities will pay you up to $15,000 to move there. Number one, coming in at number one, it's Tulsa, Oklahoma. They have this thing there called Tulsa Remote. It's the first program of its kind offering remote workers and entrepreneurs $10,000 to move to the South Central U.S. city for 1 year. Already, almost 3,000 people have been accepted to this program, and they say doing this has generated $307 million in direct employment income. This according to the Tulsa Remote Economic Impact Report. It's also generated new sales tax revenue of $2.5 million for Tulsa County and $3.1 million for the state of Oklahoma. They say they've also seen a strong multiplier effect for friends and family joining members in Tulsa, with the city gaining 3 residents for every 2 Tulsa Remote Program participants. Can you imagine paying people to move to San Francisco? Yeah, that'll be the day. Probably not, right? The next one is West Virginia. Look how pretty that is. So beautiful. West Virginia, it turns out, will pay $12,000 cash incentive. You get $10,000 the first year and $2,000 the second year. This is the third year they've been doing this. The program is called Ascend West Virginia. And it's founded by the owner of a software company. But they're saying it's making a difference. You can choose from a diverse range of Ascend communities, from small mountain towns to bigger cities. But they say they have an impressive 96.5% retention rate across the program. So once you go there, apparently you want to stay there. Also, Indiana will pay you to go there. They say they have a package valued at $15,000, but I don't really like this. Here's what you get. You only get $5,000 in cash, a season of free golf at 2 golf courses, coffee with the mayor. Qualified applicants can take advantage of this $7,200 initiative. No, thank you. It's going to take more than coffee with the mayor and a couple of rounds of free golf. In Topeka, Kansas, they do this as well. They'll offer you up to $15,000 in incentives via employer matching funding. More than 6,000 people have applied to move there. So Choose Topeka is the name of that program. And they don't just focus on remote workers. They're looking at all the kinds of people, people that are left the military service, transitioning veterans, boomerangs, former residents of Topeka looking to come back home, that type of thing. Kentucky has a program called Make My Move. The Shoals of Alabama has a program as well. It's called Remote Shoals, and it offers qualified workers up to $10,000. It looks pretty there. I don't know if I thought of Alabama as looking like that. But they've launched this program in 2019. They got a fourth round of funding. And so that's what they do. You can get up to $10,000 for going to the Shoals of Alabama. Rochester, New York has a program as well. The state of Alaska has another program. Theirs are different in Alaska. Instead of offering you money to come there, they give money to their residents. So every year, the last frontier, the most sparsely populated state in the U.S., gives cash incentives to residents of Alaska within the borders. It's called a permanent fund dividend. And this year, 2024, people got $1,312. But apparently in 2022, it was more than $3,200. So it just depends on how much they have every year as far as how much they're going to give you. Travel Tuesday continues, and we talk about what's happening in the Galapagos Islands. And yeah, it's kind of sad what's going on in the Galapagos, because it's over tourism that's causing this. And so now they're going to double tourist entry fees because of the way the island is being trashed. Tourists to the Galapagos Islands being asked to pay twice as much. So the entry fee is going from $100 now to $200 for people from just about all countries except other members of the South American trade bloc. It's called Mercosur, and that includes Argentina, Brazil, and Peru. Everyone else, you've got to pay $200 to even step foot on the Galapagos. So the Mercosur members have to pay $100, everybody else $200. They say it's the first increase in the fee to go on to the Galapagos Islands since 1998. But they're worried because it's their national treasure, and they say it's a collective responsibility to protect and preserve this very delicate ecosystem for future generations. So the money is going to go toward conservation efforts to the islands, which are located about 620 miles off the coast of mainland Ecuador. The Galapagos are a UNESCO World Heritage Site. They're comprised of more than 100 islands, and they're called a living museum because of all the endangered plants and animals that live there. Only 30,000 people live on one of the islands, but 170,000 tourists visit in a typical year. And that means ecological consequences because of rising visitor numbers. So if I'm going to the Galapagos Islands, I don't mind paying up. Do you? To preserve that for the world? Absolutely. I mean, you know, whatever helps keep that safe and keep those animals safe and preserve that environment. I'm down. Okay, let's go on a trip in the last few minutes of the show. These are, and really, it doesn't matter, but these are the best spots for women traveling alone. But I think they're great spots for everybody. But the Huffington Post came out with this article, and it is the 20 best spots that are underrated for solo female travel. But get a load of these pictures. Number one underrated destination is Slovenia, often overshadowed by neighboring countries in Europe, offering a wealth of natural beauty, charming towns, and a safe, welcoming environment for female travelers that are solo, right? They have a stunning landscape, picturesque Lake Bled, a hiker-friendly Julian Alps, a national park called Triglav, and the vibrant city of Ljubljana. I said it wrong. My bad. I'm sorry. You could take a boat ride to this iconic island church. You see it right in the middle there of the lake. Stroll through the charming streets. Enjoy the local cafe culture. Enjoy traditional dishes like potica, rolled pastry, and dumplings. So, they say it's also good for solo travelers because it's compact and easy to navigate, so you can cover a lot of ground in a short amount of time. Number two on the list is Buenos Aires, Argentina. So pretty. They say it's similar to other big cities. You should exercise caution where appropriate, but it's also a city with so much to do. Great food, beautiful culture, very easy to get around there. The recommendation is to start with a city tour, get your bearings, and then go check out some authentic Argentine asado. Enjoy the tango that you'll see on the streets there as well. Seoul, South Korea. This is beautiful. Look at how beautiful that is with all those interesting architecture there. Seoul is a majorly underrated solo travel destination. It's incredibly easy to get around because they have a great public transit system, trains that connect you to cities across South Korea, and there's a bit of something for everyone, whether you're a K-pop fan, a vintage shopper, a foodie, or you love spas. Apparently they have a lot of spas going on over there. Dublin, Ireland. This is another one. This is number four on the list. Dublin, they say, tends to be overlooked as a destination for solo female travel because it's a little chillier maybe than other destinations, but they say it's a perfect place to travel alone. Everyone speaks English. It's relatively small. You can easily walk around on your own and you don't have to stress about the logistics of travel or communication. There's art, architecture, cultural attractions. The Trinity Library is there and luxury accommodations too at the Annantara, the Marker Dublin Hotel overlooking the river. So maybe that's for you. I don't know if I would want to do this by myself. I tend to be more of a traveler with a person, but Tanzania, they say, is a fantastic country for solo travelers. The challenge of climbing Kilimanjaro, even more so. It's friendly, incredibly welcoming, and they say very safe for female travelers. Apparently, more local women are becoming certified guides, safari drivers, porters. They've urged travelers to book guides from companies that provide work opportunities for women. I'll go here, alone or with someone. This is Bermuda. Easily accessible from most cities on the East Coast, and they say people in Bermuda are extremely kind. The island is only about 20 square miles, so it feels manageable enough to explore without needing a lot of prep before you even get there. And they accept U.S. dollars, so you don't have to do a lot of the mental math or exchange currency. And again, the official language is English, so maybe a little easier to figure out. Ooh, the island of Crete. Yes, please. A great destination for solo female travelers because it's stunning, it's safe, it's easy to get to, it has wonderfully friendly locals, moderately priced than more of the other popular Greek islands as well. They're known for their amazing food and lively evening. So even if you're alone, you still feel like you're part of the whole party action thing going on there. Ecuador. Yes, it looks beautiful. Ecuador has a lot to offer solo travelers. They've got a great bus network, which makes it easy to navigate around there. They have cities like Quito and Baños, but you do have to be prepared for the higher altitudes. There's a lot to see, Amazon rainforest. Again, we mentioned earlier the Galapagos Islands, but you'll have to know that you're going to be paying more to go visit that now. Oh, how about we go here? Laos. It's a Southeast Asian country offering a serene, peaceful atmosphere with a rich cultural heritage, stunning natural landscapes, many waterfalls as well. They are known for being friendly and welcoming, embracing visitors with warmth and hospitality. And apparently people feel very safe traveling there, and the crime rates are relatively low. San Juan, Puerto Rico. My daughter did a sixth grade project. You have to, it's one of those things where you have to pick a state or territory. Somehow she ends up with Puerto Rico, and we learned so much about Puerto Rico. And ever since that report, I've wanted to go there. It's apparently another underrated destination. Great, because it's not a far flight from most East Coast cities. No passport needed. It's a city by the beach, so you get the best of both worlds. Incredible beaches, vibrant nightlife, great food, and people feel safe there. So, nice. Yes, please. I'll go there, too. What about Iceland? Right now, they've got an issue with a volcano, but it's an underrated destination. So many reasons why. Many of Iceland's truly hidden gems are spread out around the country. The further you venture out from the capital, the more likely you are to see the beauty of Iceland's natural features, from exploring glaciers and waterfalls, soaking in hot springs, something for everybody there. How beautiful to see the lights, right? And what that would be a dream. That's on my bucket list for sure. Jordan is number 12 on the list. They say there's a lot of adventures to be had here, like visiting Petra, sleeping in a glass dome under the stars in the Wadi Rum Desert, floating in the Dead Sea with nutrients that have healing properties. So while you can go solo, they advise you to go with a guide or driver to help you navigate everything. And they have a lot of really good food there as well. Number 13 is Costa Rica. Ooh, that looks like a fun waterfall to swim in as well. Incredible biodiversity, protected natural areas mean you can't help but really experience completely the flora and fauna across this country. You'll hear people say there everywhere, pura vida, pure life, which kind of sums up the laid back, friendly nature of the people there. It's a small country, great transportation infrastructure, very easy to navigate, and you can do a lot of things from whitewater rafting, canyoning, zip lining, relaxing in volcanic thermal baths, going to see the sloths, all kinds of fun stuff in Costa Rica. The next one is Taipei, Taiwan. How different from Costa Rica to Taipei, Taiwan. They say Taipei can be overshadowed by other Asian cities, but its affordability and safety give female travelers peace of mind. People walk at night, never feel uncomfortable. I see other women alone walking there too. There's night markets, flower markets, monuments, religious sites, and a lot of cultural attractions in Taipei, Taiwan. I learned something new about Rapa Nui today. You might have known this. Probably you would have kicked my butt in trivia at this. Rapa Nui is in Chile. I didn't know it was part of Chile. Of course, some people call it Easter Island as well. It's a remote island that's part of Chile, but located in the Pacific. Famous for the, I'm going to say it wrong, Moai burial statues that are carved to look like giant heads, a pristine, safe, singular destination for solo travelers. You might need a local guide to access many of the sites where the statues are located, but there's a lot to do other than just that. They have horseback riding, a planetarium, traditional dance shows, local markets, all kinds of things. Really cool architecture. Chechia. Are we going to Chechia? Let's go. How cute is that? Look at those little places. Chechia is number 16. It tends to be more of a budget-friendly alternative than other European countries, but still decent transportation, a rich history and culture, and the people there are helpful and they're accommodating as well. So put Chechia on your list. What about this one? Bocas del Toro. Mouth of the Bull. Is that what that means? This is in Panama. I love when they build the little cottages over the water like that. Oh, man. They say it's safe, vibrant culture, natural beauty, laid-back atmosphere, easy to connect with locals and other travelers. There's all kinds of things to do. You can beach hop, you can explore the jungle, you can surf, all kinds of stuff to do here. So yes, I wouldn't have thought this would be on the safe to travel alone women list, but they have Cuba on there, or Cuba. They say it takes time and patience to travel in Cuba, but if you have both, you're good to go. You have to stay in the Casa Particulares, which is a system where local people can earn money renting out rooms in their homes. That way you get a less expensive but more authentic experience. Most also provide breakfast, and they'll make dinner for you too. And the recommendation is for exploring beyond the coastal resorts and the main tourist areas of Havana. The buildings, they say, may feel like they're crumbling around you, but that's where the locals live, and that's where you want to go. And they say, if you do go to Cuba, make sure you take a salsa lesson. Ah, Japan. That's a picture of Mount Fuji and the cherry blossoms. How pretty is that? The culture is respectful and polite. They say you'll immediately notice that when you take public transportation. People are lined up in an orderly manner on the escalator while waiting to board the train. They recommend dining at a themed cafe, visiting Mount Fuji, attending a traditional tea ceremony, feeding the bowing deer of Nara, and taking a kintsugi class to learn the Japanese art of mending broken objects with gold. And the food is said to be incredible. Lastly, and this one looks a little like San Francisco to me. Doesn't that kind of look like the Bay Bridge in a way? Maybe. I don't know. It has the Bay Area vibe to me. This is Florianópolis, Brazil. The city, they say, has all the awesome vibes of Brazil. You got stunning beaches, you got killer nightlife, friendly locals, but with a chill, safe atmosphere on par with places like Miami Beach and Madrid. Great for those looking to travel to South America. They say it's a great intro to Brazil. Florianópolis has been named one of the best places to live in that country, and visitors can see beautiful sights, eat the delicious food, and they recommend that you join WhatsApp groups, the local WhatsApp groups, for tip on language, hiking, and more. And they say that's kind of fun because then you're actually getting in touch with other travelers in the area as well. So thanks to Huffington Post for sharing their 20 most underrated destinations for solo female travel. But again, I think that really works everywhere. Don't you? I do. Let's take a look at some entertainment news as well. Jon Bon Jovi, this is unfortunate. He's unsure as to whether or not he'll ever tour again. He had vocal cord surgery in 2022, but he said over the weekend that he's not sure if he's ever going to be able to tour again. He said, I just don't know. It's my desire to tour next year, he said, but I'm still recovering from this major surgery because one of his vocal cords was atrophying, with one vocal cord being as thick as a thumb and the other being as thick as a pinky. So the strong one was pushing the weak one aside and he just wasn't singing well. He said his craft was being taken from him. So he's on the road to recovery. He was able to do a song a day from his upcoming album, Forever, which he announced on Instagram. He said, my desire is to be able to do 2.5 hours a night for 4 nights a week for months on end. And he said he's working toward that goal. I hope that works out. Did you hear about this fire? Oh man, this was awful. This is Cara, and I always mess her name up, Delevingne. It's spelled Delevingne, but I think it's pronounced Delevingne. And she had this beautiful mansion in Studio City, 6,650 square foot home. It had multiple pools, as you can see. It had a poker room, a movie room, all kinds of really cool stuff. A couple of trampolines in the backyard. It caught fire on Friday morning. Two people inside were injured. Caught fire at 4 a.m. Los Angeles fire crews arrive. They find heavy flames in the back of the home that engulfed one room and spread to the attic. As they're working to fight this fire, the roof collapses. The house sitter was inside at the time. She wasn't hurt. Neighbors spot this massive fire. They caught cell phone footage of it as well. Yeah, it's a sad thing. She was out of the country at the time, Cara Delevingne. Performing in cabaret at the Playhouse Theater in London. And she said, my heart is broken. I can't believe it. Life can change in the blink of an eye. So cherish what you have. She said her two cats did get out okay. They were rescued. And she's thanking the firefighters from the bottom of her heart 100 firefighters were out there fighting this one. Took them 2 hours. Two firefighters were hurt. One in fair condition. The other with smoke inhalation. One had an incident with a ladder. But the home almost completely destroyed. It's just charred debris at this point. So sad that it was one of those houses with a really long driveway. So I guess the firefighters had to haul their hoses all the way up the driveway. All right. I wanted to get to this story. This one, Judgy Mom is coming out. Are you ready for her? Here she comes. And I know this woman is an Olympian and her skills are amazing. But she decided, Jamie Anderson, who's an Olympian, that she's going snowboarding with her one-year-old daughter on her back to share with her daughter what she loves. Does this not freak anybody else out? Because when you snowboard, aren't you supposed to fall backward? And what if you fell and you fell and crushed your baby on your back? Yikes. She's 33. She shared videos and photos on her Instagram account having a mama-daughter day up on the slopes. Her daughter's name is Misty Rose. She's 1 year old. And she strapped her right to the back in a carrier. And then she went snowboarding. She said her daughter and herself went on the snowboard down the mountain. She posted a video of them doing this. I don't know. It stresses me out. She said Misty was doing little kicks of joy as she went down the mountain. This baby girl is not wearing a helmet in any of the footage from that day at all. Maybe she's so confident that she feels she doesn't need that. I don't know, but it freaks me out. I just would I don't care how good of a snowboarder I am or skier. I'm taking precautions, right? Am I overreacting? It's possible. It's possible. Been known to do that before. I don't know. Let me see if I can show you guys the video of her doing this. It seems like a stressful moment to me, but hey, you know, this is what it looks like. Hold on. I have to take the picture down in order to show you the video of them going down the mountain, doing their thing. Yeah. Oh, I'll take down the music. Yeah, there they are, right down the mountain. I would think that at least a helmet. I wouldn't even take my baby up there. Let's see what you guys have to say in the comments, because I'm interested to see if you have any idea. Oh, John Watson, this is why you have 3 kids. One is a backup. I don't know. Sandy says, why? Just leave the kid with the sitter while you go snowboard. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you guys aren't as upset about it as I am. I would never. It seems like putting your child at risk to me. That's what it says. Mama Day 3 boys. I'm not a fan of baby carriers. Hard enough to do regular stuff while baby wearing snowboarding. No thanks. Not going to do it. Yeah, me neither. I have some people to say thank you to, and I'm so grateful. Let us begin with $2 from Luis. Thank you for that. And again, huge thank you for your messages of support that you've sent. I really appreciate it. Old Elmo for $5. Keep it going, Kim. That's the general plan, Old Elmo. We're going to make it work. Lady Beatrice, I think I would try to return those letters, the ones found behind the fireplace. And if I couldn't, give them to a museum. I'm still saying I would read them. Is that an invasion of privacy? Heather, $5 from Heather. Clark Reed, if you join as Kim's sidekick, there'll be more of these sweet, sweet 5 spots coming your way. Look at that. Heather trying to convince. We're trying to lure Clark Reed in, right? Yeah. Vilma with $5. Absolutely keeping the party going. And thank you, Vilma. You know I love you. Wes with a $5 super sticker coming in. Thank you, Wes. Watch out for iguanas, my friend. Luis, thank you for another $5. That makes $7 from you. That's really nice. Yo can add. Sandy, $5. Thank you. You're awesome as well. And a 10 from Cindy. And again, thank you to all the people who contribute to the show. Karen K, I saw that contribution come in from you, and I hope you saw that you were the sponsor of our animal segment today. I'm still saying our. Well, it is our, right? Our collective our. So thank you for that. And thank you for all the comments. I'll go back afterward and read what everyone has to say. Heather says regarding the snowboarding, they probably don't make helmets that small because, duh, babies don't belong on slopes. Thank you. Perfect. Harry, stupid is as stupid does. Lori says she's going to end up with CPS. It's immortalized now. Vilma, she's crazy. Poor child. Yeah, she did. I mean, maybe there's a difference because this woman is an Olympian. So I will say that, you know, maybe she's so much skill that you can't fault her for it. But you would think even someone with that skill would take precautions and put a helmet on or not take your baby. She's too little for, in my opinion. Jill, no way. Irresponsible. Good. I'm glad I'm not judging on my own. This is good. We will be, we all will be back here tomorrow if you care to join. I hope that you do. I'll see you tomorrow on the Nikki Maduro Show. That will be very fun. On the Mark Thompson Show, of course, John Rothman will join us. And I think we have another guest tomorrow on the John Rothman Show as well. Oh, it's Belinda Weymouth with The Planet. It's The Planet, stupid. That's going to be really fun. I always enjoy her segments so much. So join me for the Nikki Maduro Show at 9, the Mark Thompson Show at 11, and then right around 1:10 we'll get going here on the After Party Live. Never contribute if you can't afford it. Absolutely not. Would never ask it. And I am just glad to have you here sharing in the jovial chat and the conversation. And I'm so grateful that you spend your time here, honestly. All right. Thank you, Liz, for being here. I appreciate your nice words and thank you for being here. All right. So we'll end it. And we'll see you tomorrow. Thank you guys for being here and have a really, really good afternoon. Bye-bye.
The After Party Live would like to thank the following contributors and viewers like you.